or 2 Kings 7, or chapter 4, 1 through 7, the miracle of the multiplied oil. And I'll pick it up there and we'll develop it. There are four miracles in chapter 4. Really five if you divide up the miracle of the Shunammite. Because one miracle was the fact that the child was born. That was an impossible thing. The man was old. The father was old. And then the second miracle was the bringing of that child back to life. So there was the miracle of the multiplied oil in the first seven verses. And then verses 8 through 37, the miracle of the raising up of the Shunammite son. And then, I left one out there. 38 through 41 is the healing of the pottage. Remember the food was poison. They sent a man out who didn't know the difference between good mushrooms and bad mushrooms. I heard a little quip about that. I think some of you know it. You know how to tell the difference between good mushrooms and poison mushrooms? Good mushrooms are found in the open field, and poison mushrooms are found in the belly of dead people. Anyway, he didn't know the difference between good mushrooms and poor mushrooms, and the whole pot became poison, and there was a mighty miracle there. And then finally, in verses 42 through 44, the miracle of the multiplied loaves and fish in order to feed over 100 men. It wasn't the same intensity as Jesus did it in the New Testament, but it was the same kind of thing. Those last two miracles, one was a miracle of quality, and one was a miracle of quantity. And when we develop it, I'll try to tie that in. Okay, chapter 4, 1 through 7. Let me read it. It's very short. A certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord. And the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves." And Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go, borrow vessels at large for yourself from all your neighbors, even empty vessels. Do not get a few. And you shall go in and shut the door behind you and your sons, and pour out into all these vessels, and you shall set aside what is full." And so she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons, and they were bringing the vessels to her, and she poured. It came about when the vessels were full that she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not one vessel more." And the oil stopped. And she came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell the oil and pay your debt. You and your sons can live on the rest." What was the principle of the message of resurrection that's illustrated by this story? We stated it last time in a number of ways. Let me try to state it again as we'll use it in this series. The message of resurrection emphasized here is God's fullness for man's emptiness. God's fullness for man's emptiness. I pointed out last time that her situation was desperate. She had lost her life partner. Evidently, she had sold all her possessions in order to pay her bill. Her husband was one of the sons of the prophets. And her children were now grown. So evidently she was going on in years. And now she was threatened to lose her children, her two sons. They were going to be taken away as slaves to pay off her debt. And so she was reduced to the extremity of necessity. She was brought to her knees. She was really needy. I suggested to you last time from verses 3 and 4 that this widow knew exactly what God was going to do. He told her to go get vessels. He told her to pour oil. She knew in advance that God was going to multiply oil. Now try to figure, if you will, try to enter into this. This woman knew what she owed. She knew how much debt she was in. She knew her need. She knew exactly what her need was. She also knew that God was going to multiply oil. There were no limits whatsoever upon her, for in verse 3 it says, do not get a few. When you go to borrow those jars, don't get a few. Question comes, why didn't she get more vessels? Why did she only get the number that she got? Verse 6, it came about when the vessels were full that she said to her son, bring me another vessel. And he said to her, there is not a vessel more. And the oil stopped. I believe that these vessels represent her degree of need. Verse 4 says, go in and shut the door. As we're going to see, not only in this passage, but in subsequent passages, that idea of shutting the door has to do with being alone with God. Go in and shut the door. That is, go in and be alone with God. That's what Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6:6. When you pray, go into your inner room, and when you shut the door, then pray unto your Father who's in secret. And your Father who's in secret, who seeth in secret, will reward you openly. There's a verse in Isaiah 26 I love very much. Isaiah chapter 26, verse 20. Come, my people, enter into your rooms and shut the door. Hide a little while until this indignation be passed. Of course, the context is until life is passed. And it's a real tremendous verse. Right, here's the message of resurrection. According to your need, go privately before God. Go in and shut the door. You know what your need is. You know how much emptiness you have. Take that emptiness behind a closed door. Go in and shut the door. Bring him your emptiness, and then God will provide everything that you need. All the emptiness that you bring. His fullness for your emptiness. You see, that's the message of the man of God. That's what he has to preach. That's what he tells people. The greater your emptiness, naturally the more vessels you're going to bring. The greater your need, the greater your emptiness, the more oil is going to be provided. The more empty jars, the more oil. That's exactly what this is teaching. The greater your capacity, the greater his provision. The more your need, the more desperate your situation, the more God will meet with you. See, her limit, according to this passage, was not in God. She only had one hindrance, and that was in the number of empty jars, her supply of empty vessels. There was nothing in this entire endless universe that would hinder and restrain the oil. There was plenty more, except her lack of jars. You see, the oil was not like it is today. There was no shortage in those days. Because this was coming from the Lord. And her emptiness failed a long time before God's provision failed. And it's always true that your power to receive is going to quit long before God's power to bestow. God longs to give and give and give. But he'll not give you any more than you can hold. He'll fill you as much emptiness as you bring before God. That's how much oil he'll give you. But not one drop more. He can't give one drop more. So the larger your capacity, the more will be your supply. I wish I was able to communicate this and really drive it home into your hearts. I don't mean I wish I was eloquent. I don't want to be eloquent. But I wish I had the power of the Lord to really communicate what God is saying here. That God's provision is waiting on your capacity to receive. There's no end whatsoever to his giving. You know that song, I always think of Bob Johnson when I think of this song. He giveth and giveth and giveth again. That's our God. And that's the truth of this chapter. So if we're going to be real men of God and real women of God with the message of God, then we have no other answer to give to those in bondage. This woman came to him in bondage. She was in debt. She was in chains. She was broken. She was bereaved. She had many problems, and she came to the man of God. She needed counseling. And she came to the man of God. And here's what he said. Here's the message. Take your need, symbolized by the empty vessels. before God, symbolized by the shut door. And he'll provide, symbolized by the oil. You see how the principles are underneath the facts? Take your need, the empty jars, before God, the shut door, and he'll provide the oil. I'll leave out the pictures this time. When someone comes to you with a problem, I don't care what the problem is, what is the message of the man of God? Take your need before the Lord, and he'll provide. That's what Elisha was telling this woman. And that's always the message of God. That's the sum total of all victorious counseling. That's all you can ever tell anyone. Someone says, well, I've got a great need. Then bring many jars. But go to the Lord. Go before God. Go in and shut the door. Don't tell me. And the real victorious counselor always says that. And no Christian should ever go beyond that. There's no human help. The victorious man of God, the man of God with the message of God. And of course, in this case, the message is, take your need to the Lord and let him meet you. Let him provide. He doesn't sit down and say, well, let's see if we can work out your problem. He doesn't say that. He sends you behind closed doors. He sends you to be alone with your God. That's the only thing that we have a right to do. Because everything depends upon God. If God doesn't meet your need, if he doesn't fill the empty jars, what can the man of God do? He can't do a thing. If God doesn't meet you, the man of God is helpless. And it doesn't matter how great the need. The need is extra, and if the need's exceeding, then just bring more jars. Bring more vessels. This woman brought the vessels according to her need. She knew what she owed. And God provided, and he over-provided. His fullness is always in proportion to your emptiness. In this connection, let me just encourage you by way of warning. I guess it's a warning. I encourage myself as well. Don't despise it if God brings you to emptiness in your life. In this case, it was financial debt. In this case, it was bereavement. In this case, it was old age. In this case, it was poverty. I don't know how God will bring you to emptiness. He's gotten many ways to bring us low, and he chooses to use all a variety of ways. But I know this. There is not a circumstance in life. There is not a situation. There's not any condition in life that will not be fully dealt with behind closed doors. That's the message of this chapter. And I have an idea that I don't want to charge God with infirmity, because he's not sad in the sense that he has a need. But he has a desire. It's not a need, but it's a desire. He longs to meet his people behind closed doors. But his people constantly refuse to go there. They've got every other method in the world for getting out of debt. Every other method in the world for meeting their own needs. And how few go with their empty vessels behind closed doors and lay their emptiness before God. That's the message the man of God preaches. And I'll tell you, that's not a popular message. It's not a popular message at all. Bring your vessels, big ones, many, empty, before God. Lay them before the Lord, and you won't come out of that room the same way. Because God will meet you there, and he'll fill you with oil. And your cups will run over. I praise God as I study this for Elisha, the man of God. He had the real message. When that woman came to him, he didn't say, my, you owe a lot of bills. You sure got yourself into a mess. I remember your husband when he was in school. He wasn't too bright anyway. He had a lot of problems with some of the courses he took. Listen, I have some influence, and I'd be glad to go to your creditors. You think that would help? I'd be glad to go to your creditors and talk to them, those naughty people trying to take your sons away. And maybe I'll use some of my prophetic influence on them. And I'll try to high pressure them a little bit. You know, you got a prophet pulling for you, and you might be able to get out of this situation. You know, a lot of people do that. Someone comes with a need to a counselor, and the counselor says, let's see if I can work it out. I'll go talk to the person. Try to iron things out and smooth things over. Well, I'm glad Elisha didn't do that. He didn't do that at all. He didn't say, well, now listen, you set it all down on paper. And we got a special prophets fund, you know. We take it every month or so. And I'll check the profits fund and see if we can have, we should have some in benevolence to cover this, really. This is a terrible thing. There's six schools of the prophets. And maybe we'll take an offering among the schools of the prophets, because they ought to be touched by this. And they ought to be involved in your need. I'll spread it around, tell everybody your need, and maybe then they'll be moved. He didn't do that. And I'm so glad that he didn't. Because he is a real man of God. And he's not trying to scratch up the dough. He's not trying to do anything except deal with her spiritual need. And so what does he tell her? Take your emptiness behind closed doors. Tell it your problem. Bring your emptiness behind closed doors and watch what God's going to do. Oh, he had the message of victory and the message of resurrection life. The message of the new covenant is always that. I have no other message. You have no other message. Any man, any woman of God has no right to tell anybody anything except take it to Jesus. Take all those vessels. I don't care how serious the problem. I don't care how complicated the problem. No man of God has a right to try to solve it. No man of God has a right to say, I'm going to let you cry on my shoulder. Get it off your chest. Lay it before me. Tell me. Not at all. He only has one message. And that's what I love about Elisha. He really preached the message of God. Take your need. Go in privately before God. I won't even pray with you. I won't even go with you. You pour that out before God yourself. Did she do it? Oh, did she ever do it? And when she came out, she was aglow. She went in with such a heavy burden. I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to lose my son. She came out and she ran to the man of God and she said, God did something. God provided. One time, we had a lady come to the parsonage. I think all of you know my position on counseling. This is my position on counseling. That's the only thing we can ever do. And this one lady came one time, I'll never forget it. And she came all burdened and hysterical. She was crying, and there was all kinds of problems, you know. Usually the problems are all the same. It's either marriage problems or guidance problems or something like that. And I said to her as she came to the door, about how long will this take? And she said, oh, are you busy? I said, no, I'm not busy. I'm just wondering how long it will take. She said, about 45 minutes. So I took her in the back room, and I said, all right, everything you were going to tell me, you tell Jesus, and I'll be back in 45 minutes. Away. And it was such a joy to come back. I came back in 45 minutes and she said, it only took 5 to tell the Lord. But the burden was lifted. You know that song that we sometimes sing, I must tell Jesus, I must tell Jesus all of my burdens. I cannot bear these troubles alone. Jesus can help me. Jesus can help me. Jesus can help me. Jesus alone. Jesus alone. See, that's the whole message. And so we always think that we're going to get help, human help. Elisha couldn't help her. But as a man of God, with the message of God, he could tell her what to do. Bring her emptiness behind closed doors and let God fill you. And of course she did in verse 7. He said, go sell the oil, pay your debt, and you and your sons can live on the rest. All right, let me review. In the war against the Moabites, the message of resurrection was the message of receiving. That's what the real man of God preaches. Don't try to be a giver. Be a receiver. Don't give God anything but a trench. An empty hole. That's all you can give. Because all you can give is the ability to receive. And then in the story of the widow, the message of resurrection is God's fullness for your emptiness. You go behind closed doors and you meet with your God. And you present your need and lay it all out before Him. The more jars, the merrier, says God. I'll be glad to meet you and I'll fill you, everything you bring me, in emptiness. All your need, I'll provide all I am for all you need. Any comments or questions about those two stories? All right, let's begin then, chapter 4, 8 through 37. This is a big section. This is a big story. The miracle of the raising of the Shunammite's son. Now, as I studied this story, I was sort of in a quandary because there are so many details. I was stopped. I tried to read it at one sitting. I always do that. Just try to read it through at one sitting. But you know, sometimes you're sidetracked and you get blessed as you start reading. Well, this is one of those passages that will bless you at every turn. And when you come to teach a chapter, you say, well, now where in the world am I going to start? How am I going to teach this section when I get blessed from everything and the principles are all over the place? There's one principle on guidance, one on being a godly person, one on hospitality, and they're just all over the place, all these principles of God. And so there were many temptations to get sidetracked. I'll give you some examples. I won't develop them. I'll just give you some examples. Like verse 9. Well, I think I could spend a good time in verse 9. She said to her husband, behold now, I perceive that this is a holy man of God passing by us continually. Do you know how much you could say on verse 9? You could talk about her perception. How she was able to perceive a holy man of God. You could talk about the fact that Elisha didn't even know he was being watched. Somebody looking out their window saying, I see a man of God passing by. We never know when someone's looking. There's so much you could say on that. And notice what she didn't say, I perceive there goes a famous man. I perceive a popular man of God is passing by, or a brilliant man, or a successful man, or even a radical man. She didn't say that. A holy man of God. Take off on that. There's so much to say just on that one single verse. And then he passed by continually. There's a lot you could say about that. He didn't sit in his cave at Carmel and polish his halo all the day long. He constantly was passing by. He was involved. He was an active man. Of course, he was doing it right. He wasn't active in the wrong way. But boy, you just follow Elisha. He was busy all the time. He solved the pollution problem there at Jericho, see? And he put a woman in the oil business in our last section. He raised the Shunammite's son. He healed the Syrian lepers. He purifies the pottage. He recovers the axe head. He relieves a famine. He anoints a king. He leads the Syrians blind into Samaria. He was busy all the time, passing by continually. He was very active. He was available to everybody. The whole world was beating a path to his door, from the king to the commoner. Everybody was going to see Elisha. And even when he died, the Bible says that they took, in a war one time a man was killed and they took his corpse, threw it into Elisha's grave, and when his body hit Elisha's bones, he came alive. He was busy. That man had more vitality dead than most of us do alive. And there's a lot you could say. So you can get sidetracked. Or I could preach on the character of the Shunammite. I read over Nancy's notes that she had on the Shunammite. Can't add much to that. She was a godly woman. You could spend an awful lot of time studying this chapter, talking about this woman, verse 10, her hospitality. You realize the surrender implied in what she did? You see, in Palestine, there was an outside stair that led up to the roof. And when she built this chamber for him, he never had to go to the interior of the house. He could just go from the outside into this private thing. And the part of the house that it was on was the sun porch. That was the envied part of the house, especially there in the east. And that's where they would like to be. But she just surrendered this. So you could talk about the woman. Or her spiritual vision. She was a godly woman. And it's seen all through the chapter. Not only that she perceives a man of God when she sees one, but she's also perceiving those that are not men of God. She didn't respond to Gehazi at all. Because she could tell the difference. In verse 23, when her husband asks her, why are you going to see him? It's not the new moon, it's not the Sabbath. Implies she used to go for special instructions. She constantly went to his Bible studies. Every time he held them, and he held them in certain seasons. And so you can see that she was unselfish, and she was reverent, and she was spiritual, and she was content. When he asked her, what can I give you? She said, I dwell among my people. That's all I want. I'm satisfied. So there's a lot you could say. What I'm trying to show you is how much you can get sidetracked. Or there's a lot to say about Gehazi in this sense. He was unreal. He was a hypocrite, hobnobbing with a man of God. You always find hypocrites doing that. Or I could even preach on his son. Or not Gehazi's son, but the son that died. The whole message of victory is illustrated by this son. Supernaturally born, that's how we start out. Next picture you see of him, he's busy working in the field, in the vineyard. And finally he collapses under the strain. My head, my head. And he dies. And through a man of God, and through union with the living, he's brought back to life. Any message there? You see, there's so much to sidetrack you as you go through this that you're tempted to miss the main message. The main message is the message of resurrection. And what does this section teach us about resurrection? I believe this miracle is closely connected with the one that we just discussed, the one preceding it. There, the prophet told the widow, go privately before your God. Take your empty vessels and close the door and God will provide your needs. Now, in this story, now try to follow me here. In this story, it's not what the prophet preaches. It's not the message he gives. It's not the message he tells others like it is in all the rest. It's not what he does. And it's so instructive how he lays upon that child, his eyes upon his eyes, and his mouth upon his mouth, hands upon his hands. That's not the point. What is the main point of this section? It's not what Elisha communicates to others. That's what we generally think. What's the message of the man of God? What message does he give out? What message does he give out? Not this time. If you read this passage carefully, I think you'll agree with me that the message of resurrection illustrated here is not what the prophet taught, but what he had to learn. He had a lesson to learn in this chapter. Elisha, man of God, successor of Elijah, had to learn something about the message of the resurrection. Let me briefly get the story before you, and then I'll state the principle and try to develop it a little bit, trusting that God will give me grace as we go through it. There was a rich woman in the village of Shunem. That's the idea of the great woman, the great house, prominent woman. She was a very wealthy woman in Shunem. She was an Israelite. She said, I dwell among my people, Israel. She was an Israelite. Now, don't forget, Shunem was quite a place. All through the Bible we see it. That's where David got his maiden wife, Abishag. You know Abishag? Solomon, remember Solomon had his heart ravished with the Shulamite. It's the same place. It was about 18 miles from Shunem to Carmel where Elisha was staying. We infer from verse 8, there came a day when Elisha passed over to Shunem. There was a prominent woman and she persuaded him to eat food. The word persuaded there implies that at first he was a little bit reluctant. He didn't want to go in there. And she persuaded him. She constantly asked him. And because of that open invitation, every time he passed through, he would stop at the house and she showed him hospitality and he found it very pleasant. And after a while they became friends, and after a while she talked her husband into actually building a special room, a private room, on to encourage extended visits. And they prepared for his comfort and for his privacy and for his study. They put a table in it and a chair in it and a lamp in it and a bed in it. That's all he needed. And that's what they provided. In seeking to repay all this kindness, he didn't know what she wanted and she was content, so she said she didn't need anything. Gehazi suggested that she was getting on in years and she didn't have a son. Why, for God to provide a child in a home like this would have been a tremendous thing. And so Elisha speaking by the power of the Lord, said, next year at this time, you're going to have a son. She hardly could believe it. She said, don't mock me. And the year passed, and sure enough, the child came. Then the Bible jumps over many years. It says the child grew. He grew up. And now the child older, and he goes out into the field, harvest time, to see the father. When he gets out there, some people think it was sunstroke or something else. I don't know exactly what it was. But the child grabs his head, cries, "My head, my head." The father then gives the child to the servant, says, "Bring him back to his mother." She nurses him, probably puts a damp rag on his head. He'll try to develop in principle form as we develop the main principle. All right, let me state the message of resurrection as I see it. Not the message Elisha gave, but the message Elisha had to learn. You see, sometimes we think that we know it because we can give it up. We don't know it until we're able to apply it in our own lives. Giving it up is only part of it. And Elisha had forgotten something. He had to learn this. Let me state it for you, and then I'll try to illustrate. The message can be summarized in these words: unbroken fellowship, communion, union, relationship. Any words you want to use, but he needed to be reminded again that his power did not come because he was a prophet. Nor did it come because he had Elijah's mantle. Nor did it come because he had the prophetic staff. Nor did it come because he had a faithful group of servants working for him. Nor did it come because he was a teacher at 7 Bible schools. He rotated among the schools of the prophets. He had to learn relationship with God. Elisha, the man of God, had to be reminded of what he was so faithfully preaching to others. Take your vessels and go behind closed doors. So easy to give up. All right, let's illustrate it through the story. I'm so glad that the Bible is a record of truth. It's faithful in recording the victories of the Bible champions, but it also records their weaknesses and their failures. No human book would do that. Human books would just jump over the warts, but not God's book. God points out these failures. In 2 Kings 4, we see the weakness of Elisha. The failure of Elisha, 2 Kings 4. And all the way through, it's contrasted with the faith of the Shunammite, the strength of this woman. Hebrews mentions her, I believe, in verse 11, when it says, "By faith, women received back their dead by resurrection." I think that's referring to the Shunammite. Elisha, man of God, holy man of God, conference speaker, Bible teacher, prophet of God, successor of Elijah, didn't know everything. And he had to learn something. I believe as we read the chapter, we find out that he had substituted presumption for faith. He was expecting far more than he received. And as a messenger of victory, as a messenger of resurrection, as a messenger of the truth, as a man of God, he was in a dangerous position. There's several indications of it throughout this section. Number one, he's not perceiving the true character of Gehazi. All the way through this section, he's snowed by that joker. All the way through this section, that turkey hobnobbing with Elisha, pretending he's a man of God, he's a faker. He's a hypocrite. The next two chapters will reveal him in his true colors. Show what he is. Matter of fact, God sends down an awful severe judgment on him. Turns Gehazi into a leper because of his unreality and his hypocrisy. But Elisha at this time, he's not seeing it. He's not understanding. He's not perceiving. Now, though he doesn't recognize it, the woman does. Constantly does. It's amazing that Elisha's doing what so many men of God do. He was trying to engage Gehazi, the hypocrite, into a spiritual work. And it couldn't be done. And every time Elisha assigned Gehazi to do something spiritual, the thing fell flat. And it still didn't ring true. He didn't understand it. Verse 24, he saddled a donkey and said to her servant,
Now, she'd already, her son has died, and she learned the lesson of the closed door. So she goes up and she lays her son in Elisha's room and closes the door. Just leaves him there with God. She saddles this donkey, says to her servant, "Drive and go forward. Do not slow down the pace for me unless I tell you." So she went and came to the man of God, to Mount Carmel. It came about when the man of God saw her at a distance, he said to Gehazi, "Is no good for nothing, inconsiderable, lousy, rotten, miserable, hypocrite of a servant." I added some of those comments. "Behold, yonder is the Shunammite. Please run now to meet her and say to her, 'Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?'" And she answered, "It is well." About to tell him anything. She was spiritually sensitive. She knew the kind of a man he was. It was ringing true in her heart. Was she lying when she said it's well? No, no. More than we lied when we sang that song, any more than the man who wrote it lied when he wrote the song. "Peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll. Whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say it is well." It was well with her. She was trusting in the Lord. She didn't even let her husband know that she had lost her son. It was well, spiritually. But she's not about to let her secret, her emotions out to him. And then verse 27, you get a little picture of Gehazi. "And when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught hold of his feet, and Gehazi came near to push her away." Here she is, brokenhearted. "Get away from him. Don't you know he's a man of God? A Bible teacher? He's important." "Elisha, whatever happened to you, you're deceived by this carnal man." Appointing him to spiritual work. A second indication of the fact that Elisha had a problem at this time is verse 27. "Gehazi came there to push her away, but the man of God said, 'Let her alone, for her soul is troubled within her, and the Lord has hid it from me, has not told me.'" Well, I tell you, the prophet, whose job it was to receive communication from God, to receive revelation from God and communicate it to man, confesses, and he's puzzled about it. "God didn't tell me. God's holding it back. He's hidden it from me. He hasn't received any revelation from God." I tell you, it's a sure sign, and anyone who's had any experience at all, knowing the message of victory and preaching resurrection, you're in bad trouble when God stops speaking. You're in bad trouble when he closes this book and you're still required to teach the next day. Where are you going to get your message? You got to dig it up yourself. And brother, that is terrible. And so Elisha, not perceiving the character of Gehazi, Elisha, not receiving any message from God. When did Elisha finally get the message? I think I know. I won't press it. I'm not going to be dogmatic. I don't insist upon it, but I think I know. The woman makes a statement to him that brings him right back to his senses. Verse 30. "And the mother of the lad said, 'As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you.'" What do you think that brought to his mind? I'd be wrong, but here's what I think. There was a day when great prophet Elisha was a little peon following in the footsteps of Elijah. And there came a day when Elijah said, "Go." He said these very words, "As the Lord liveth, I will not leave you." And he laid hold of the man of God. And I think it was at that point, as he recalled, she's being a woman of God as I once was a man of God. Because at that point on, everything's different. He arose and followed her. He went the 15 to 20 miles to go to Shunem. He had already sent his servant Gehazi on ahead. But of course that was futile. Verse 29, let's just read about that. "Gird up your loins, take my staff in your hand, go your way. If you meet any man, do not salute him. If anyone salutes you, do not answer him. lay my staff on the lad's face. Verse 31. Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff on the lad's face, but there was neither sound nor response. So he returned to meet him and told him, the lad has not awakened. Of course not, Gehazi. God can't use you. You're not a spiritual man. And by this time, he already knew it. Elisha was on his way himself. I wasn't going to leave him. But I come to this next part. Of course, this is the meat of the whole thing. As we read it, it's so wonderful, so instructive. In our previous story, he had given the message of resurrection. Go with your needs and shut the door, and God will supply. It's easy to say, isn't it, Elisha? It's easy to tell someone that just lost their husband and threatened to lose their family and lost all their possessions, take it to the Lord! Man, I do that so often, so easy. Pour out your heart before Him. I'm a man of God. That's His message. That's what you're supposed to do. Look at verse 33. So he entered and shut the door behind them both. And he prayed to the Lord. It's easy to tell someone else to do that. Elisha had to learn to do it himself. And so now he goes in and he shuts the door. Now it's him. It's easier to sit back and say, hey, here's what to do, and you go do this and that. This time it's Elisha behind closed doors with empty vessels. He brings his need before the Lord. He's beginning to see that my servant didn't work, and my prophet's staff didn't work, and all my prestige as a Bible teacher doesn't do anything. And he comes before God himself. As a messenger of grace, it's not enough to tell others to go behind the closed doors. But every preacher of the message of pure grace ought to be very familiar with the secret place. Ought himself to spend time behind closed doors with his own God. That's the secret of power. It's not the man. It's not the rod. It's not the mantle. It's not the position that he held. It's unbroken communion with his God. You want a message of grace to get out? Then the messenger himself must be in union with Christ. Must himself be laying hold of God in the secret place. He had to confess, life is not in me. It's not in my staff. It's not in Gehazi. So Elisha lays hold of the Lord, comes before God with the empty vessels. I want to help the needy. I want to help the brokenhearted. I want to bring life to the dead. You don't get it by helping the needy. You don't get it by helping the brokenhearted. And you don't get it by bringing life to the dead. You get it by going into the room and shutting the door and laying hold of the Lord. The only difference that I see between this miracle and the miracle that preceded it is in one case it was the listener that went behind closed doors. In the other case it was the preacher. Both are true. And both are part of the message of resurrection. So Elisha comes before God. He says, I'm here. I'm praying. I've got an impossible situation. My vessel's now empty. I've learned. I've seen it. I'm not going to trust men. I'm not going to trust methods. I'm not going to do anything except I'm going to lay hold of thee. I'm going to trust in thee. And I believe that's the main message of this chapter. It's not enough to preach the truth. You've got to live the truth. It's not enough to tell others to roll their burdens on the Lord. You've got to do it as a messenger. The message of grace is roll your burden on the Lord. The messenger of grace is one who rolls his burden on the Lord. I used to think that a victorious preacher is one who turned the eyes of men to Christ. That's not a victorious preacher. Not primarily, that's part of it, but that's not the main part. A victorious preacher is not one who turns the eyes of men to Christ. A victorious preacher is one who has his own eyes turned to Jesus Christ. And in turning his own eyes to Christ, he's enabled to turn others to Christ. 33, he entered and shut the door behind them both and prayed to the Lord. And he went up and lay on the child and put his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, his hands on his hands. Now he's totally involved in the ministry of bringing life to others. He couldn't be more involved. By the way, the Jewish law is if you touch the dead, you're polluted. That's what he was doing. And the flesh of the child became warm. He returned and walked in the house once back and forth. He went up and stretched himself on him. The lad sneezed 7 times. Of course, this idea of sneezing 7 times, you almost have to be at full strength to get a good sneeze out. I had a grandmother who was a champion sneezer, and she used to exhibit her ability during the prayer at a church service or something like that. And she just really sneezed. But sometimes if you get a good sneeze out, it hurts. And I think this number 7 is a number of perfection. And it's just saying when he sneezed 7 times, he was brought back to full strength. It's interesting. Every time I preach on a section, I always try to see if Spurgeon has a sermon on any particular verse. And he has a real tremendous sermon on the child sneezed 7 times. And you'll probably want to read it. It's very interesting. His approach to that sneezing 7 times. I didn't make it my own, but I thought it was very interesting. If anybody wants to read that sermon, I'll be glad to lend it to you, because it's rather comical. He takes it as the first signs of life, as sneeze. And a sneeze isn't eloquent, and a sneeze, he just went into the sneeze. It's funny. Let me just summarize. Message of victory is take your emptiness and bring it before God behind closed doors, and God will meet your need. That's my message. That's what I tell others. But then the second miracle. The message of victory is that the messenger, the preacher, the prophet, the herald, must do the same thing. And in this chapter we see Elisha learning the same message he's been preaching. And now he had to go behind closed doors with his God. And God did a marvelous thing. I guess we'll stop there. The next two miracles, why don't you start, and they're very short, and see what you come up with. One's a miracle of the changing of quality. The other's a miracle of the changing of quantity. Ask yourself this question. What does this show me about the message of resurrection? And I think you'll have a good time. That's the question. Father, we thank you for the Lord Jesus Christ, for recording for us the message of Christ, the messenger of Christ. We want to be men of God, women of God, preaching the message of God. Teach us not to go out and try to solve men's problems, but turn their eyes to the Lord. We know that if they'll only come before you with all of their need, that you'll provide, you'll meet them there. And teach us, Lord, as Elisha had to learn. It's not enough to tell others to do it. But we ourselves must not rely upon any method or any message. But we ourselves must come in before Thee behind closed doors and exercise our souls before Thee before we'll ever see resurrection life come through us. Just to do that.